B-Pod Studios.
The Felger Mass Podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Are you ready for this? It's Felger and Mass.
That's stupid, my God.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Jalen, obviously you mentioned about the future you guys have ahead. This summer you have some decisions to make in terms of an extension, Boston, if it gets offered. What is kind of your mindset about that this summer, and what is your expectation for how that'll play out?
Say that again.
In terms of the possibility of you getting an extension this summer, especially after making All-NBA, what is kind of your thought process going into the summer, and how do you expect it to play out?
You guys, what's my thought process? I don't even really know how to answer that question right now, to be honest. My thought process is, you know, take it one day at a time. Focus on, you know, getting better. Focus on, you know, what the future holds and see where we are from there. I guess I don't really know how to answer that.
Again, the thought that Jaylen Brown likes Boston and wants to stay here may be true. I'm not discounting it. But you know who's never said that? Jaylen Brown. He's given another opportunity there after Game 7 and, you know, obviously fumbled around with it, not wanting to answer it at all, obviously. But we continue the conversation with that with Gasper of the Boston Globe joining us via Zoom. Chris Gasper is brought to you by Premier Basement Waterproofing, our green team. Couldn't beat the heat, but you can beat the heat by calling our guy, the guru, Mike Albert. Mike's lineup of a French drain, crawl space encapsulation, and the game-changing Santa Fe dehumidifier never comes up short to get your home moisture-free. And moisture-free for the summer and the wet months coming up. So to schedule with Crystal, call 844-LIVE-DRY or visit premierbasement.net. And then what, Maz?
It's game over for water.
Gasparino, what do you think of the Supermax for Jaylen Brown? Where do you think we stand with that?
I mean, I would still do it just based on the season he had overall, what you're trying to build, the fact that you have an advantage here and that, yeah, you can't trade him for a year, but if you want to move him at some point down the line, I mean, I still remember years and years ago when they signed Avery Bradley to a deal and it was nowhere near a Supermax. But at the time I was like, this is ridiculous for Avery Bradley. But you'd be surprised how quickly the economics of the NBA can shift and change. And for a guy who's 26 years old, if you do have to move on at some point down the line, you do that. But I just think there's a lot of recency bias going on. Look, he was horrible. He was horrible in that series against the Heat. And in game seven, he failed. He choked. He didn't deliver. It was bad. You want to be a one, you got to play better than that. You can't have a career high 8 turnovers and 8 field goals. But I just feel like too many people are now basing their opinion on this off of that one game. And I think, and off that one series, I think if you look at NBA history, even the greatest of the greats, and I'm not saying that's who he is or who he's ever going to be, but even the greatest of the greats, Magic Johnson, 1984, Tragic Johnson, horrendous series. Sports Illustrated wrote an article saying that Magic Johnson was not a clutch player. 1987, Isaiah Thomas, he was brutal in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Celtics. And it wasn't just throwing the pass to Bird. He had 3 games in that series where he shot 37% or lower. Paul Pierce, 2004. Had a series where the Celtics got swept where he shot 29%. There's a lot of guys that have hiccups or failures or don't deliver on the biggest stage at some point during their career in the playoffs. And that doesn't mean that's who they are in perpetuity. And that's what defines them.
You had an interesting point. What if Derek White doesn't follow that missed shot at the end of game six?
Yeah, so game six was probably Jaylen Brown's best game of the series. He was 9 for 16, 26 points. He has, you know, 10 rebounds, 3 assists in that game. And he, in the fourth quarter, you know, he had 7 points. He was 1 for 3, but he had 7 points, no turnovers. Versus Jason Tatum in that game, who finished with a gaudy 31 points, but Tatum was 0 for 8 from 3. He was 1 for 6 with a turnover in the fourth quarter. And so if Derek Brown doesn't tip that ball in, I think the discussion around Jaylen Brown is probably a little bit different. Going to game 7 was probably the worst thing that ever happened to Jaylen Brown, because he delivered his worst game of the season, probably the worst game of his career, considering the circumstances, in game 7. And it's sort of the old Bill Belichick thing, right? How many times have we talked about Bill building his team for next year and being colored by the last thing he saw, even this offseason? What's the last thing Bill saw? 2 kickoff returns for touchdowns in Buffalo. So what does he go out and do? He signs a bunch of special teams guys. So I think that recency bias can play into it for even the most astute of evaluators. And certainly it plays into it for fans and media. And so having that be the last thing you saw of Jaylen Brown, of course, a lot of people now are like, he's not worth it. Get rid of him. They're never going to win with him, so on and so forth.
Chris, let's say game 7 went the other way. Let's say Tatum rolls an ankle, Jaylen Brown plays well, and they win. Okay?
Yeah.
What would the narrative then be?
Oh, I'm sure it'd be just as reactionary in the opposite direction. No question. But my only thing would be, why would you base it off one game, Maz? If you thought he was worth it before game 7, then why would you not think he's worth it after game 7? I just think that's silly.
Well, okay, but can we wait game 7? Can we give it a little more weight, like a weighted exam, a final exam? You don't buy into any of that? It's just like, that's the same as a game in November?
No, but so let me ask you this then. How much did you weigh Tatum last year in the finals, shooting 37% from the field? And if they got just a baseline performance from Tatum in the finals, they're probably champions. Like, I didn't hear a lot of after that, well, Jason Tatum, they should trade Jason Tatum. Don't pay Jason Tatum. In fact, I think what I heard was MVP, MVP.
Well, you're
MVP.
listening.
I heard a lot of that.
Okay, so you're talking show, about, like, you're talking about fans now.
Right.
I mean, I'm talking about both. I mean, certainly the fans. But if you want me to address you guys directly, I can do that as well.
Yeah, no, address it directly. I'd rather do that. I mean, I don't remember saying that last year after Jason.
I remember, hold on, I'm not done.
Oh, okay. I remember criticizing Tatum pretty clearly last year after game 7. I think we said on this show over and over and over again, you lost because your best player didn't play well enough. Wiggins played better than Jason Tatum in that series. He got his ass kicked and they lost. So what's wrong with saying it the other way around now?
And just so we can get there, I'm still not sure Jason Tatum's a number one on a championship team.
And I can't stand either of them.
Like, I haven't seen it. Luke says you just got to be patient and wait. He's going to grow into it. I say, I don't know. I mean, maybe, but I don't see it. And I base it a lot, Chris, on that finals. So go ahead.
Okay, so then you should want to trade both of them, right? So you guys want to trade both guys. I know. You're not going to get it done.
I do.
Right? You want to trade both?
No, I don't.
Right?
I don't. Okay. The question isn't whether either one of them is a good player. The question is whether the two of them can coexist and win a championship. That's the question. And who do you think the better player is?
Maz, they would have won a championship last year if Jason Tatum had held up his end of the bargain. You answered your own question.
But they didn't. I just asked.
But that's not Jaylen Brown's fault. So then you should want to trade the guy who didn't hold up his end of the bargain.
No, no.
Which you just said you don't. That doesn't make any sense.
No. What I said was they've now had 2 years where can we agree that they've both failed in the last 2 years?
Absolutely.
Okay, who's the better player?
Jason Tatum, no question.
I'd prefer to keep the better player. That's why I would keep Jason Tatum. Not because I got any sort of thing for Jaylen Brown. Okay, to me, it all comes down to who the best player is. And by the way, I've said 10 times here in the last 2 days, plan A is to keep them together. Plan A is to keep them together. Plan A is not to separate them. But if you don't have plan A, one of them's got to go. Who are you keeping?
Yeah, it makes sense. I would keep Tatum. But I'll just tell you, I don't think either one of them is winning on their own. I just think people think like, oh, you could just swap out the sidecar for Tatum and make it it's Bradley Beal, it's Damian Lillard. And like Tatum's still going to win. Like he'll just win a championship then. I'm not so sure about that.
I'm not either.
I mean, and I just say this. I think what the thing that, again, Brown deserves all the blame that he's getting. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I'm intrigued that the blame has gone from he was horrible in this series to he's not worth the Supermax, get him out of here, off of one series and one game. That's my only point. And so my other point on it would be, you guys, and I agree with you, Jason Tatum is the better player. But then why the better player should be held to a higher standard, not the same standard, higher. He's not. He's just not. Oh, he hurt his ankle in the beginning of the game. He's 6'9". You mean he couldn't shoot over people for the rest of the game? He dunked the ball during the game, for Christ's sake. But it's just like, oh, no, he turned his ankle. So he just gets a total pass on that. Do you know in the last two games of this series, Jaylen Brown was 1-for-13 from three-point range? What was Tatum? He was 1-for-12. Was that all his ankle? Was the 0-for-8 in game six all his ankle? Do you know who averaged more turnovers per game in the series? Despite the fact that Brown was horrific in game seven and had an 8-turnover game. Do you know Jason Tatum actually averaged more turnovers per game in the series than Jaylen Brown did? But I don't hear any of that. And I don't hear any of the same type of get rid of him criticism going to Jaylen Brown. I didn't hear any of that last year after the NBA Finals. So to me, yeah, Tatum's the better player. That means you get held to a higher standard, not a lower one. And that's what I hear from the fans and frankly from you guys too.
Yeah.
Held to a lower standard, though he's the better player.
Well, you didn't hear me say the other day that Jason Tatum could have done a better job fighting through the injury?
I mean, I didn't. That's pretty boilerplate, but yeah, I guess.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, next time I'll heat it up a little bit more for you. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's supposed to be about hot takes. I mean, he could have done a better job fighting through
So then I think you really want to take it up with Felger because he's the one who said he had no problem about the injury.
He has.
I didn't say that.
I thought the injury was legit. I give him a pass on game seven, but it's totally fair about to bring up, well, how about the previous 20 games, whatever, however many playoff games they played. He wasn't good enough. There's no doubt about it. And I absolutely hold the finals against him last year. Chris, real quick. So what do you think the team does? We've all given our personal opinion. What do you think the team does? How do you think this ends?
I mean, I think they're pretty much going to stay the course for the most part with the Jays. I think that's plan A, as Maz put it. And look, I freely admit, I don't know if Jaylen Brown wants to stay here or not. Now, I do think part of his caginess might be a little bit of a leverage ploy just from the stand. This is just my opinion, just from the standpoint of if you felt, you know, hypothetically, if you sort of feel like you're not really being included as much on things that, and all of a sudden you have maybe a little bit of leverage, you feel like from the standpoint of, well, you know, if I'm jumping up and down saying, sign me, then they're like, well, he knows he wants to stay here. Just the money. If you're a little bit cagey about it, then maybe it becomes a little bit of, hey, here's an airing of my grievances that I would like you guys to be able to go through and rectify before I commit here long term. So I'm just saying, I don't think just because he's not like, this is the place I want to play the rest of my life, that means he doesn't want the deal or he doesn't want to play here.
Okay, more with Gasper and your thoughts coming up right after these words. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Ready or not, it's more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Why do you think that identity, like, once again kind of vanished, and how big of an issue was that for this team this year?
It was the issue. You know, I think this was a team in last year that prided themselves on defense. I think defense was their calling card, and this year offense was our calling card. And I don't think you win championships, you know, with a better offense than you have a defense. You know, I think pretty much we were the best offensive team in the league for sure. Depth, you can talk about the ways we can score, our versatility on offense, really 1-7, 1-8. But defensively, I thought we have the versatility. I thought we have the talent defensively. But you know, on any given night, we were just, you know, let go of the rope and have a lot of breakdowns on that end.
And we're the second best defense in the NBA.
We had to improve offensively to become better, to compete. We had to be able to play defense and maintain that level and identity that we had prior to be our very best. You know, on both ends, we came up a little bit short. I do think that if I had to say, you know, one end that we came up more short on in our last few games, it was probably the offensive end. But overall, I thought we were good on both ends of the floor when I looked at it in totality. Could we have been better? Sure.
No, happy overall. It's great. But the real point of that little combination there, little combo, is a pretty sizable disconnect. You know, the players on the team keep talking defense, 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 that athletic story the other day, where Jaylen Brown actually breaks a team huddle or a team meeting. Again, it wasn't totally clear to me, but, you know, Missoula's doing a film session on offense, 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 and Jaylen Brown is shown breaking the huddle. Defense, one, two, three, defense. So the players keep going, defense, defense, defense. And Stevens and Missoula keep saying offense, offense, offense. And feel a little bit of a disconnect, Gasper, wouldn't you say?
It does certainly seem that way, particularly when you're looking at a player like Malcolm Brogdon, who's sort of known as a more offensive-minded player, and he's saying that. He's somebody that's looking at it from the outside, too, because he wasn't here last year, and he's saying, okay, when we played the Celtics last year, they were a defensive-minded team, and we knew that, and that's what got them there. That's sort of what I was expecting. Now I'm on this team. And what I saw from the outside looking in, being on the inside, I'm not seeing that. And to me, that's kind of disturbing. And Malcolm Brogdon's opinion to me on this weighs heavier, means more to me than people that have been with the organization for a while, like Brad, like Marcus Smart, even Missoula, because I think that they are looking at it a certain way. Maybe sort of their opinion is colored by what they want things to be. Where somebody like Brogdon, who wasn't here, has no emotional connection or attachment to what the team has done before, the times before they've come close, is more matter of fact and just looking at it and saying, where's the defense that I, you know, played against and heard about when I came here? It seems like we're just really offensive oriented. And again, that's a weird thing for a player who's primarily an offensive player to say. So, you know, if he's saying that, that there's something there.
Okay. Meanwhile, you are concerned, as many are, I am, about the culture on the team and the tone of the team. And there was, you know, there's some examples of it, but one was something Joe Mazzulla said after their Game 7 loss. We'll just play you that cut, and then we'll get your take. Go ahead, Jim.
How do you, obviously, just with it ending right now, look back on this season? How do you assess the season this team had?
It's one of the best locker rooms I've been a part of. The guys cared. They gave it everything they had. It's the most important thing to take from this. Obviously, we didn't achieve our goal. We didn't win, which was our goal. So, we failed in that regard, but it's not because the guys didn't have a sense of togetherness, character, you know, and just who they are as people.
All right, Gasper, what's the culture problem and how does that quote represent it?
Yeah, and I think there's a Marcus Smart quote that's even worse than that. I give Mazzulla credit. At least he used the F word in their failure. Marcus Smart couldn't even bring himself to do that. He said, we kept fighting. That's all you can ask for from this group. No, actually, I can ask for more. Like, you make it to the finals or you win a championship, which you said was your stated goal in training camp. But to answer your question, to me, this sort of feeds. I think there's a problem when the head coach and the longest tenured player, two people in leadership positions, sort of create this culture of what I would call false achievement or false accomplishment, where, you know, we tried really hard. And everybody cared, and we deserve credit for that. No, you're in a bottom line business, right? And yes, it was great that you guys came back from 3-0. Absolutely, I get that. But you didn't finish the job, and you needed a really fortuitous bounce to even get to Game 7. So, no, you don't get credit for that. And when you have a stately, mild-mannered player like Al Horford use the word failure multiple times in his press conference after Game 7, which he did, saying that they failed, then you know, like, Al Horford is telling the truth. Like, it was a fail. It was a fail. I don't know why that's so hard for people in the organization to say. It doesn't mean that you throw everything overboard, that everybody associated with it is a bad person or a loser or has no redeeming value. That's not true. But you set out to accomplish something. You didn't accomplish it. It was a fail. You hopefully learn from that fail. But again, what do they always say? What's the first step to solving any problem?
Admitting you have the problem.
Admitting you have the problem. And I think the problem for the Celtics is they can't admit, at least some of the people in a leadership position like Mazzulla and Smart, they can't admit that they have the problem. And the problem was it was failing, that there was something with the team that led and bred to failure.
Don't you think Stevens is on that list too?
I think Brad is just a really nice Midwesterner who chooses to see the bright side in most things. Like, I think Brad's so, element of this is more, I think it's Brad's element in this is more genuine, I think, than both Smart and Mazzulla, who I think are basically saying, you can't criticize me, man. You don't know as much as me. You don't know how much I put into this. Smart and Mazzulla, to me, have very similar personalities of, you know, when things are going great, they want to stick it in your face and tell, you know, they want to tell you how smart they are. But when they make a decision that everybody disagrees with, they just dig in deeper. They dig in even deeper and say, I'm right, you're wrong, you're wrong. And I think that that's I don't see that in Brad. I didn't think Brad was digging in. I think Brad was sort of trying to look on the bright side because that's his personality.
Well, it all ends up at the same bottom line, which is it's okay. We were actually pretty good. We were just 48 minutes short. So however you get there, through defensiveness, like you're talking about, or
that's fair.
You know, Stevens's good naturedness, it all ends up in the same place.
I'll say this on this, because I know you're sort of looking for me to, you know, you guys have been ripping Brad pretty good. I will say this. I don't think it's accurate to say they were 48 minutes away. You want to say we were one game away, one good performance away. They were not in that game for 48 minutes. That was a game that they lost control of very early. So you were not, you know, it's not like 48 minutes away. The bottom line is, like, pretty much from the moment that ball was tipped off, you were out of it. You didn't show, you no-showed. In a huge game. So to sort of portray it as like, oh, 48 more minutes and we might have gotten it done, that's not accurate. That's not true. And Brad, I think, has to address the fact that he has a group now. It just doesn't include Tatum because he hasn't been in all five conference finals. But a group of guys that's been to five conference finals has lost four of them. And you could argue it could be lost 5 of 5 if Jimmy Butler hits that three, or if he elects not to shoot a three and just pulls up for a game tying two. Last year, you could make that argument that they could be 0 for 5 here.
So, Chris, when you talk about culture, you're talking about organizational standards, right? Is that a fair way to put it?
I would say I'm talking more about sort of personality, sort of the demeanor of the team, which is like, no matter what, we came out on top. Even if we lost, you should give us credit because we accomplished something even when we didn't. Okay. We're always accomplishing something.
Okay, so what about Gary Washburn reported recently, and this was when they were down 3-0. Washburn reported that Jaylen Brown was biting his tongue and that there were issues in the locker room. Do you believe that?
I tend to believe Gary's reporting is normally spot on. He's very, very good.
You want to elaborate?
To UMass?
No.
Yeah, I mean, no. I'll just go with that. Yeah, if there's, I would not be
because the reason I ask you it this way is because the cut we played coming in had more to do with the disconnect between the players and the coach, which to me suggests that internally, you know, there's a different thing there, right? Internally, are they communicating? Are they working together? Yeah. Do they believe in the coach? Do they believe in each other? The culture thing is more about we're not setting our standards high enough. This is how we operate. This is what the goals are. This is what we're going to attack. So what I'm saying is, what do you think is a bigger problem? Do you think it's the culture, or do you think it's there are problems in the room?
And Maz, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I was wondering if you had something.
Yeah, I thought you had something. Yeah. I did too.
No, I don't have anything. I'm asking the question.
No.
Because I think culture and the locker room are different things.
I think it's the culture, because I think the culture sort of sets the tone for the locker room. And I think that, you know, again, I know I've gone down this road before, but it's just, I think Smart's a big part of that. It was mind blowing to me that the longest tenured player for the organization that has won the most championships, tied with the Lakers in the history of the NBA, didn't use the word failure at all in his press conference. And he, you know what he said multiple times? It happens. It happens. It happens. We fought hard. You know, we fought our butts off. We came up short. We didn't reach our goal, but I'm proud. It happens. I just think if you have that kind of leadership. So I think, Maz, you and I are saying the same thing. I think, you know, what's that line from Remember the Titans? You know, attitude reflects leadership. I think the attitude, the standards of the organization, whatever you want to call it, are reflective of what the leadership of the team is, which from a player standpoint and a coaching standpoint is, well, no matter what, we tried really hard. You got to give us credit for that. And, you know, that's an accomplishment in and of itself.
Okay, from one soap opera to the next, Gasper was down at Gillette the other day talking to Mac Jones, observing what was going on down there. His impressions of the situation coming your way right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now, more of the show that gets Boston home. Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Yeah, it's been really good. It's been normal. I think everything he's done so far has been really good. I think the communication is the most important part, and trust. I think it all starts with that when you're with a new coach, and he's done a great job in controlling the room. I feel like everyone's on the same page. Just got to continue to do it. It's a marathon, not a sprint, so we know that, and he's obviously had great experience in the NFL and at Alabama where I was at, so there's a lot of good stuff that we've talked about, and just looking forward to working with him.
Mac Jones on Bill O'Brien the other day. Gasper was down there. What were your impressions of Mac Jones, Bill Belichick, that whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, Mac to me sounds like a guy who's really sort of been re-energized and feels like he has a chance with this change of offensive leadership going from Matt Patricia and Joe Judge to Bill O'Brien. He's just sort of seemed like the old Mac again. I would say it was not the greatest day if you're a Zappy fever sufferer, because he certainly looked and acted and talked like he was the number one quarterback, and he was very upbeat. And I just thought the words he used, you know, trust, normal. He used the word normal, and everybody is on the same page to talk about what was. I thought those were all intentional word choices, because he's basically saying, hey, these are all the things we didn't have and I didn't have last year, and what was just a complete cluster for me and for the team. And now I have that baseline of just professionalism, something that looks like an actual NFL offense. And now I have a chance. I have a chance again. So I you could just tell sort of how upbeat he was and how happy. I mean, honestly, it's weird. Like, you know, it was almost like somebody who had been let out of prison and was going back to society. That was sort of like what his entire demeanor was, just how upbeat he was. And also, you know, he took a little bit of ownership. He said, you know, I'm someone who is trustworthy. I have to regain trust in the team. But I think when he said that, he's talking about from a performance level. I don't think he's talking about, I'm not reading into that like, oh, I have to regain, because I think the team was behind him. What is it you guys made up? You said
the gang of five.
I think the team for the most part was behind him. Yeah, I know there may be some people saying, hey, we're winning with Zappy. Why go back to Mac? But I think the team was mostly behind. Remember last year it came out when they were in Arizona that some of the veteran guys like McCourty and Slater were encouraging Mac Jones to be more vocal, not less vocal. So when he says trustworthy and all that, I think that's about reestablishing his level of performance. I think the only person it's about actual human interaction, human relationship stuff with is Bill.
Right.
I think he has to win back Bill's trust. But we know Bill. We've all, you know, Maz, we've known Bill for this long. Bill doesn't care what kind of human being you are, as long as you win.
So where do you think
as long as you win and you don't cause problems for him, Bill's fine.
Where do you think those two are?
I don't know. And I have to be honest, I'll raise my hand because I did ask a question in the Mac press conference and I failed. You know, I'll say it. I'll say what Marcus Smart wouldn't say. I failed. I should have asked Bill. I mean, I should have asked Mac, what's the status of your relationship with Bill Belichick? I was trying to get it in at the end. I was a little surprised nobody asked it. You know, in that press conference, but I failed. I didn't ask it. So it's hard to gauge, but that's, to me, that's the $64,000 question. What's his relationship with Bill?
Okay.
How are those guys doing?
Did you hear Bedard this week? And even if you did, I'm going to replay it here just for the sake of the conversation. Here's Bedard on Boston Sports Tonight this week with myself and Holly. Jimmy, number one.
This seems like a family where, you know, the tough things have not been said yet. And nobody knows where they stand. And I think this goes back to Bill Belichick. His history would say Phil Simms and Bill Parcells. I think he's trying to show him tough love. And without the love, he's just trying to be tough and seeing how Max reacts. I think Bill is still mad about last year. I think he is.
Last year, still mad about it.
Yeah, that Mac Jones didn't buy in from the beginning. I think that Bill looks at Mac and thinks he helped sabotage last season, including his friend Matt Patricia. And I still think, because Bill's not going to admit that he was the one who was wrong, that it was never going to work in the first place. He's going to put it off on Mac Jones, and I think that's what he's done. And Mac is still harboring ill will towards Bill about the position that he was put in, and no one has said anything. They haven't sat down and talked about it, which you would think, well, one grown up in this situation would do, but we know that guy doesn't do that. He didn't do it with Brady.
Okay, so Bill's not going to do it with Brady. He ain't going to do it with this kid. And that leads to the question, where does that leave them? You know, where does that leave them? And Holly then went on to say, well, if that's where they're at, then this thing ain't going to work. And then if it ain't going to work, where does that lead us? Which led us to Bedard to take the next step. If they don't get off to a good start, number two, Jimmy.
If they don't get off to a good start, I think that Mac is going to be watching Bailey Zappe. I do. I mean, and they have a tough early slate. I think that if it doesn't go well, if the wins come and everything's good, the good feelings, all that stuff, then they'll be fine. But it's going to be tough.
Okay, your thoughts on all this, Gasper?
I think that there's a way they could get off to a bad start and Mac could keep his job. If the offense is scoring points, look at their start to the season. Philly, Miami, and then Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, and then Dallas. All those teams could put some points on them. And if they get in a situation where they're losing, let's say just hypothetically, you know, they're losing games like 31-23, 31-27, but Mac looks a lot better, the offense is clicking, then why would you change the quarterback? You could be 1-3 or 0-4, but if you lost to those high powered offenses and you're scoring around 23, 24, 25 points per game and you look better than last year, how could you possibly put that on the quarterback? At that point, I think the tough part is both of these guys to make their case for why they should remain in their jobs essentially have to crap on the other guy. Like if you're Bill, you made such a horrendous decision last year that the only way you can justify it is to say, my decision wasn't that bad. Look at my track record. Look at my rings. This kid wouldn't buy in. He sabotaged the whole thing. And oh, by the way, I don't think he's really that good. He's not it. If you're Mac and you have that bad second year, everybody expects you to take the leap. You take a step backward. The only way that you can sort of set yourself up and say, hey, that wasn't really me, is to denigrate Bill's coaches and the choice of coaches. And I thought he kind of very subversively did that in this press conference with those words like trust, normal, and everybody's on the same page.
Communication.
He basically was saying like, hey, we have a baseline of professionalism here that gives me a chance that we didn't have last year. That is the problem, I think, is that for each of those guys, the only way for them to save themselves is to sink the other guy.
Beautiful place for the Felgren Maz, I would say.
Oh, it is a great spot for us.
We'll be watching carefully. So we've been keeping you at bay for all this time. Gasper's got one more segment to go. It's our long commercial-free segment, I promise. Right to your calls with Gasper right after.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Now, more of Felger and Maz on the Sports Hub.
Bill, can you help us understand what Joe Judge's role will be with the team this year?
Yeah, he'll do whatever I ask him to do. He'll be involved in a lot of things. Joe's great. Smart guy, got a lot of experience. He'll do whatever we need him to do. And he can do a lot, so he will.
The assistant coach's job is real simple. Make the head coach happy. That's your job. He has a vision for his team. He knows what he wants his team to look like. It's our job to listen and to go out and execute the way he sees it. I come to work every day with one simple policy. Whatever he says goes, okay? I'm not the head coach here. That's one certain thing. And my job is to do whatever he says to the best of my ability and get the players playing better. Sometimes you work for somebody, and whatever the outside perception may be, the truth inside is completely different. There's a reason I came back here. There's a reason I wanted to be here. There's a reason I wanted to work for him.
Meanwhile, the Joe Judge embarrassment continues. Do you have a quick thought on that, Gasper, before we go? I do want to slam some phones, but go.
Of course he wants to work for him. You do a poor job with the task he gives you, and the guy gives you a promotion. Who wouldn't want to work for somebody like that? He's basically, you know, coating you in Teflon and saying, you're my guy. I'm going to make sure that, you know what? I mean, I don't know. For people who watch, like, Succession, Joe Judge is like Cousin Greg. You know, that's what it is. Tom's like, I got you. No matter what you do, no matter how much you screw up, like, you know, you're my guy. And you're sort of the guy that I know I can dump everything on. So, yeah, you're just going to come along. I just think Bill say he has a lot of experience doing what other than special teams where he was excellent.
Kissing
he is
ass.
An excellent special teams coach. But what experience? I heard that, Murray. What experience does he have, though? Like, he wasn't a head coach that long. He was never head coach at the college level. He had experience being, what, a gopher for Nick Saban? What experience are we talking about?
Okay, let's zip through these calls with Gasper. Nate in the car has a thought for the Celtics. Go, Nate. Okay, not ready to go.
Kendrick Perkins comment.
Go.
Yeah, he's coming back to Kendrick Perkins' comments on where he said Trey Young might be an option. I'm curious what you guys' thoughts are on that. Just kind of an attitude that he might bring to the team and a killer instinct more.
Okay, we've been doing this last couple days. Panel, thumbs up, thumbs down on Trey Young. Jaylen Brown out, Trey Young in, as Kendrick Perkins wants.
Down.
Probably thumb down.
Thumbs down. It's thumbs down. Not for Jaylen Brown. No.
I just want some kind of change here, though, so I'm no. torn.
No. Murray's just worried about how his Hawks will be affected without Trey Young.
Very good.
Gasper, give me a second on that.
He was down there, and they made Jim say, Jim will dance for anybody. When he worked for that station in Atlanta,
he's talking about
Trey Young.
How do you feel about Trey Young?
Trey Young. Oh, sorry.
We don't give a rat's ass about Murray.
Oh, all right. I'll save that for our show.
I do.
I like Trey Young. I like him a lot, but I think they've been down this road of the smaller point guard, Kemba Walker, Isaiah Thomas. Those guys are one injury away from not being the same player, and Trey Young doesn't play any defense.
Evan in Saugus. Go ahead, Evan.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Before I get to my point, I was wondering if you
get your point.
Eric Spoelstra. The Eric Spoelstra comments from last night about the team not having to rely on three-pointers and finding other ways to win. But my point accordingly was the Nuggets were 26 in three-point attempts during the season. They're the team to beat. The Celtics' identity is to beat the Warriors. You got to be the Warriors, and that's just not going to work. They're at the perfect age and perfect everything to be a great defensive team, and that should be their identity. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan. The reliance on the three-pointer, Chris, does that have to change?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's only one team that's won a championship playing that way. They have the two of the greatest shooters of all time. And other people have brought up three-point rate for other teams that, you know, higher. They've mentioned, obviously, Golden State and Milwaukee. You tell me if I'm wrong, because you watch Milwaukee more than I would, Mike. But the reason Milwaukee shoots all those threes is that Giannis collapses the defense. Giannis gets inside. So what's open is those threes on the outside. The three-point looks they're getting are different from the looks the Celtics are. There's no complement for the Celtics to the threes. Their best players are jacking up threes. Milwaukee's best player is in the paint.
So, I think the Bucks are analytically driven. I think there's nerds up in their second floor that say a three is better than a two, and if you take enough of them, you'll be better off in the long run. So I don't give them a break on that, but at least the Bucks a lot of times do work their way inside out, which is what the Celtics want to do, too. They want to drive and kick. It's just harder without that big guy in there. Brian in Groveland, what do you got on the Celtics?
Hey, I'm tired of being referenced, the reference that Jordan took 7 years to win a championship. The reason why he couldn't win a championship at the time, he had to go through the Sixers, the Celtics, or the Pistons, and he couldn't do that. He was competing against championship-caliber teams, which this team isn't. They're the team. They're the ones that should be the ones to beat in the Eastern Conference. LeBron is no longer and hasn't been for years in the conference. So they're the team.
Okay, fair
preach.
Point.
I love that. You know, he was losing to hard-nosed veteran teams. He wasn't losing to, like, the play-in Heat. I know there wasn't a play-in tournament then, but you get my point.
No, it's absolutely right. But to be fair, Jordan developed his outside game as he got older. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a much better shooter by the time he got to his championship years than when he first entered the league. But there's something to that. Jordan, you're right. He wasn't losing to the Cavs. He was beating the Cavs and then losing to teams that went on to championships, or for the finals anyway. And so that is a little bit different. Matt in Malden has a Red Sox thought. Go, Matt.
Hey, earlier this week, the Boston Globe ran yet another Chaim Bloom puff piece, and it's gross, and we see what they're doing, and no amount of puff pieces is going to make them likable. Get rid of them. It's tiring.
Okay. Maz, your thoughts.
Yeah, so look, I'm not sure that Bloom is safe. I mean, I don't know. Are they starting some sort of campaign? Maybe they were earlier. You think people are going to lap that up if this team finishes last and none of these young guys turn it around? Bloom better hope they play better, and the young guys especially. He might be able to get away with it if the team finishes last and the young guys play well. But if they both go bad like they're going now, he's porked.
Gasper, you have a Sox minute or 30 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, I just think there's too many placeholder-type players, you know, on the team. And it's just this big waiting game for supposed to be, you know, what is coming. I heard Maz the other night. I thought he was dead on with Carrabas just talking about this idea of, you know, you're not going to sit around and wait for some of these prospects. You go get a player now that can fill the job. And if it turns out the prospect's really good, you find a place for him or you trade the other player. You can't go into it and say, we're not going to upgrade this position right now because 2 years from now, there's somebody who could be really good there. So I agree with that. And just on the puff piece nature of it, the Globe's done the same thing with like Bill Belichick. It's a, like a genealogical thing. It has nothing to do with his performance.
Well, at least
as a general manager or chief baseball officer, as it is.
That thing about the placeholders. Well, if you're a big market, you're right. The small markets have to do the other thing.
Right, exactly.
You know, but this is, again, another indication of how Henry wants to run it like a small market operation.
I mean, was it with you the other day, or was it with Carrabas, where someone called in and says, Maz, the obvious guy they should have gotten was Rizzo. I didn't even think of it.
Of course.
So, like, that would have been a simple long-term solution for 2 or 3 years to plug the gap, would have fit the culture and the mentality of the city. Like, you know, when I say that, meaning the intensity of the city, because Rizzo plays with a fire up his ass, and he's a pro. You wouldn't have had to deal with, any of the guys over there, from Kyle Schwarber to Eric Hosmer, to go right up and Bobby Dalbec right up and down the line. You'd had a bona fide big leaguer to play first base.
Can I just, Maz, can I ask you this? Because, you know, I was watching the game last night. Great eighth inning, obviously, for the Red Sox. But is there anybody you feel emotionally attached to
no.
on the roster?
No. Zero.
Like, I don't even
no.
feel emotionally attached to Devers. I like him a lot, but I'm not like emotionally, like, you know, Betts, I was like, oh, I want him to do well. Or, you know, this guy or Jackie Bradley Jr., whatever it is. There's like, or Bogarts the same way. You know, I want him to do well. He's my guy. He's our guy. There's no one on. I just feel like they're all just stopping by.
It's so
true. And also, Kike Hernandez was the guy. Remember, Kike was the guy, and Kike was very good last night, but he's had a rough season. Kike was the guy. That's sort of your front man. He was the guy who said, Haim promised me we'd be a better team. That's the guy you're running out there is like, that's the guy that's running around saying, oh, the general manager promised me the team will be better. I feel like he's here for a cup of coffee, 30 seconds too. It just feels like they're all here as placeholders until something better comes along.
Tony in Kingston, final Celtics thought. Go ahead.
Okay, so I watched Aaron Gordon last night, who Denver picked up to give them an edge. He's 6'8", 235. And my opinion is that a guy like Stevens does not appreciate people of that type of talent. He wants a guy that has superb basketball talent, but sometimes you need the edge. And if you watched how he handled our friend Jimmy Butler last night, and I think he was added to Denver to put them over the top, to give him an edge, to give him a little bit of attitude. Huh. And if Jaylen Brown had his attitude and Jaylen Brown's skills, you give Jaylen Brown everything he wants, and he doesn't. So I don't think that you can.
Okay, does he shoot a three-pointer? Because if that's the case, the Celtics want nothing to do with him, and that's
no, Gordon,
part of the problem.
You guys remember Aaron Gordon when he was on Orlando? The Celtics lusted after him for years.
They did. Yeah, they
for
did.
For years they wanted Aaron Gordon. Okay. So I that call's not accurate. I think Aaron Gordon's one of the most overrated players in the NBA. Now, what's happened there is they put him on a role where he's like the number four guy. And I think he's fine in that role behind Jokic and Murray and Michael Porter Jr. And he's also grown up a little bit in terms of not trying to score as much. But I've never been a big Aaron. I think let's pump the brakes on Aaron Gordon.
I mean, he shot almost 35 from three this year, 34.7. But he's an erratic shooter, I would say, in general. And erratic from the line, which is usually a dead giveaway.
Okay, one more just because I want to get it clear the board. Brendan in Reading, go.
The problem is Smart. You can't trade Brown. You're not going to get equal value for you. You have three guards who are doing the same thing right now. Hey, Marcus, why didn't you step up in Game 7? It's because you don't have the capability. Jimmy Stewart, take a bath. Bedard's a fiction writer.
Okay, I don't want the.
Ooh.
Nice. You're on. But
waste a day, pal.
You agree with the guy on. You agree with the guy on Smart, probably, right, Chris?
Oh, yeah. That right until the end when he was insulting Jimmy and Bedard. That was great. That call was fantastic right until the end. No, I agree. I mean, I do think he's right when he says, you know, base three might be strong, but Derek White can do the things that Smart can do, except for he's a more consistent shooter. Also, when you want to talk about a team losing its defensive identity, how does that happen when your leader is the reigning defensive player of the year? I mean, Smart's defense really fell off this year. I thought his team defense was excellent. He's still very good at putting his hand in there, drawing the charges and all that. But I thought his on-ball defense fell off, and he even admitted that his defense kind of fell off a little bit this year. So we're talking about the team lost its defensive identity. How does that happen when you have the defensive player, or I'm sorry, when you have the DPOY? When you have the DPOY, how do you lose your defensive identity? That makes no sense.
Okay, so we're good if we criticize Smart. That's okay.
Oh yeah, definitely.
All right. I just want to make sure I run it. I just want to make sure I run it by the Globe Ombudsman before.
I don't mind if you do that, because you know if you're going to hold, you know, role players get held to certain standards. Jaylen Brown should be held to a higher standard than Marcus Smart. I would just say hold Tatum to a higher standard than Jaylen Brown, or at least the same standard, because we all agree he's the better player. He's, as you would say, Maz, he's the straw that stirs the drink. So, you know, that's what it is, right?
I just want to make sure. From now on, I'll make sure we get approval before we run anything.
Do we have
public.
A Murray and Gasper extravaganza
You don't
tomorrow.
Need approval. I'll just keep texting you.
It was
show.
A joke. It was a joke.
We do, know, 11 to 2. You're there tomorrow, right, Chris?
I don't know. Am I? Am I not? I just maybe it's like last week where I didn't know you weren't going to be there.
All right.
Who knows?
So I'm sure.
I think neither one of you should show up. That's what I think.
So tune in to see the surprise. Chris, thanks for coming by.
All right. Chris. Sounds good, guys.
All right. Jimmy Stewart has some hockey juice. He's got some Bruins nuggets.
He's got some good ones. Bruins nuggets.
No, we're gonna we're going to sample Stu's nuggets on the Bruins coming your way after Murray gets you updated. 90 seconds, no spots.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.